Hey, everybody. Welcome to the September 9th, 2020 Platinum Call with A to Z. So glad to see you guys tonight. So if you haven't joined us before, the way that we usually run the calls is I have questions that have been mailed in, which I will cover, but I always give you guys first crack since you were able to make the call. Don't be shy. Go ahead and unmute yourself and ask a question. And if there are two people that are doing it at the same time, no problem. We'll just work it out amongst ourselves. Ideally, the questions are related to breeding. I would really, or puppy raising, either one. I'd appreciate that we sort of stay focused on that because we have a lot of people on the call tonight. And obviously, most folks are interested in breeding and puppy raising. So I will go ahead and turn it over to you guys. Go ahead and ask any questions.
I have a question. This is Celeste.
Hi, Celeste.
This brought this to mind when Sandy had seen green discharge and brought her dog to the emergency room, or not the emergency room, but her vet. And I started thinking, I don't think I've ever had a litter that didn't have green discharge. So, as a matter of fact, Kona had a green puppy last time. Is this something I wasn't worried about it? Should I be?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. Green discharge during pregnancy. I didn't hear the story, so I don't know what happened with Sandy. But green discharge during pregnancy up until late stage one labor or stage two labor is something to be concerned about. Now, the green looks awful to us, but really all it is placental blood. It's just the way the canine placenta removes iron from the blood and it ends up to be green. So it's not inherently a bad thing. We're all going to see green. You may have green puppies or you'll see green from the placenta. What is key is when it happens. So if you see it anytime you're not going to see it probably before the third trimester, but if you see it in the third trimester or if you see it in early stage one, there's no indication that second stage labor has started, then yes, it's a concern because what it means is that a placenta has detached from the uterus. And we know once we have that happen, the oxygen problem becomes an issue. The puppy needs to be born relatively quickly. It's kind of amazing how long they can survive with just the placental blood, but it is a concern. If you see it during whelping, it's not an issue at all. That's perfectly normal. That just, you know, because the placentas have to tear away from the uterine wall in order for the puppy to be born. So it's the timing of green discharge that's important. If you have it, say you're 2 weeks into the third trimester and you see green, you either have a puppy that has died or is dying. And there you have to make a decision. Are you going to take the whole litter in order to save that puppy? And remember, bitches are kind of remarkable that they can lose a puppy and the rest of the litter can be perfectly fine. And often they're losing that puppy for good reason, that there's something wrong. But we also know that if we have an early drop in progesterone, that can cause the same issue. So timing is everything on green. And I'm sorry, I haven't been on much this afternoon, so I didn't hear. I saw that Sandy had had a C-section and seven puppies were born and they were all healthy. Is Annie okay?
Everything's okay. Okay. As far as I know, they're home now. Yeah, everything's fine.
Great.
Okay, I had one other quick question. And I guess this is almost like an ad for the Dealey catheter. When I was, I use those. And when I was whelping Kona's litter a few weeks ago, I had a stillborn. Well, I didn't know it was a stillborn, but it came out and I was suctioning her with the Dealey catheter. And the fluid that came out of her lungs, or his lungs, I can't remember what sex it was pink. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously had blood in it. And I was thinking, and it was at that point when I saw that, I said, I'm not going to go to extraordinary lengths. You know, I could not revive the puppy, but I did not spend 45 minutes trying to do it or anything like that when I saw that. And I thought to myself, if I was using those old-fashioned bulb things, I never would have seen that. And I've also seen almost like mucus in there, you know, like.
Yeah, the yellow mucus or absolutely. Yeah, the delay gives us, it's such an improvement over the bulb syringes, which honestly, I used bulb syringes for 30 years, and I'm not sure I ever got more than a teaspoon of anything out over 30 years. They just aren't very functional in puppies. Well, the delay is fabulous, in my opinion. I totally agree. And it does give you an idea of what's coming out of those lungs. If it's brown, chances are you just are not going to save that puppy. If it's blood, chances are you're not going to save that puppy. If it's mucus, and even if it's yellow, you may have a shot at it. So it is a good assessment, and you can get a whole lot more out of it than you can with the bulb syringes. And really, they are not that expensive. They're in the master supply list. I think I've bought boxes of them, which if you're only breeding a few litters, you don't need to do, but I think they were maybe $2 each, and they're $4 each if you buy them singly. And honestly, to save, you know, $1,000 puppy, it's worth a $4 investment. So that's a good plug, Celeste. I totally
agree.
Hey, Mo. Hi, Mo.
So we still use the old-fashioned bulb syringes. So describe for me how far down the throat the delay goes, how much different it is.
Oh, well, it's significantly different. Have you seen the delay?
No.
Anybody have one close at hand? Because mine are down in the boxes in the basement, so I'm not going to grab one. Looks like...
I do.
Susan's
hang on.
Dartingly.
Oh, Sylvia.
Hey, Tracy. Now,
hello.
Go hey.
Yeah, I just wondered it since I'm stocking up for the next round here.
They are really worth the investment. So you can put them into the lungs. You often do not need to. So you can clear the nostrils. You can clear the mouth. Can you see Susan's head?
Yeah.
Susan,
oh, yeah.
Let me,
so you're putting the clear plastic that's in the middle down the puppy.
Yeah. So the green part is what you put in your mouth.
Okay.
You put that in your mouth, and then you put that small tube into the puppy. Susan's doing a great job. Step one. and you can, if the puppy is dying or the puppy is stillborn, put it into the lungs and clear it out. If the puppy's fine and it's active and it's, you know, you're just trying to make sure it's okay, then you can clear out each nostril and you can clear out the mouth and maybe a little bit into the throat. So it gives us a lot of flexibility in what we're doing. Thanks, Susan. That was great.
Well, I'm trying to buy different things right now, although this is a tough time for any not-for-profit. But I am about to get a Doppler.
Hey, that's a big investment. Fabulous.
And so we just had one that we had to work on for quite a while. And if I hadn't had a vet sitting there, our main person who supports me is a vet. And man, when she goes in the zone and starts smacking that puppy around to get everything out of him, she's there and you don't stop her. And so she probably knows about delays, and she helped us start our breeding program. So I'm gonna ask her about that. She's never been a fan of Dopplers because she bought cheap ones. I'm buying the one that you recommend. And so I've been trying to slowly but surely over time buy different things, and I'm working with another Avidog program that's a sister program in Assistance Dogs, who actually does a lot more of your nutritional stuff than we do right now. So I'm just trying to, only been the head of breeding officially for less than a year,
and look at, so you, I'm go
trying to go slowly, but slowly but surely buy the right tools. So thanks. I appreciate
it. Yeah, I think so. I would say, you know, I'm a big fan of Dopplers. And Mo, you need to know it takes practice. You just have to recognize that. And you don't want to practice a ton on the same bitch, because you don't want to Doppler those puppies over and over and over again. But recognize, and you have the benefit of having more litters, so you're going to get more practice more rapidly than, say, your average breeder who breeds two litters a year or something like that. So recognize, and I really recommend that you print out the abdominal shot, you know, the diagram of the bitch on her side, which has both right and left. Print those out and keep them. Mark where you think the puppies are, put down the heart rates, keep them, and that will be really your homework, your worksheet. How did I do? And you know, at the beginning you may be off some, but the more you practice, the better you're going to get it, and the more your ear gets tuned into it.
Well, this last litter had a stuck puppy, really stuck. And if Jamie didn't have the skills she did, we would have had a problem. And then we thought we were done. And all of a sudden, we are about to name him Rocket. Rocket came flying out at the end, and almost no one was there. And had we used a Doppler, we would have known he was there.
Yeah, you can.
I kind of went, okay, I'm getting a Doppler, Jamie. I don't care what you say. I'll pay for it myself, because we would have known that there was one more.
Yeah, and I think, let her play with it too. Let her see how much better they are than the cheap ones because of how quickly they pick up that heartbeat, as opposed to the cheap ones where you look and you look and you look and you're just cooking those puppies trying to find it, and then you can't get a reading on it. So I think that that's an excellent investment. That's a long-term investment. Delise, you can use probably the nurses online are going to go nuts, but I use one a litter, maybe two a litter. I mean, I don't use one per puppy.
Oh, and heck no. So, good Lord.
Okay, thanks, Tracy.
I use one a litter too. No.
I feel better about that. One per person. Yeah, everybody's got hands on puppies. So, Mo, if you think about it, you know, that's going to be a pretty small investment. And you can buy them by the 25-pack. So you could buy 25 and go through them in a couple of years, and they are not expensive at all. So
I think Jamie's biggest question is going to be, how do those of us who are not medically trained be taught how to use them properly?
So at the beginning, talk to her and just use it in the nostrils and the mouth.
Right.
Yep.
And don't go too far. Tracy, go ahead.
Okay. I can, just because I suction people as well. You don't actually, so it looks really long. You're still just going to the back of the throat. You're actually not going deep. What you're going to have to do with your puppies is accordion them and have them upside, you're not upside, but you know, head down a bit to move the secretions toward the mouth, but don't expect that you're going to be going down to do a deep oral tracheal suction like I do on my people. So that's not the goal, and you don't have to have medical training. It's a much more effective way, because you actually have suction. Your mouth is being the suction canister. And the bulb is just big. The bulb is just a big thing. So it's hard to get even back to the back of the throat with the bulb.
Renee's saying it's very intuitive. So the other benefit, Mo, is that you will see the fluids that are coming out and get an idea of how serious this is, just like Celeste was saying. So I think they're two great investments, but You know, honestly, you do face the challenge. I think many of us face the challenge who don't breed a whole lot, that all of it is expensive. You know, if you're going to get everything on that supply list, it's expensive, but boy, there are moments it's really nice to have them because, you know, we always have to ask the question, what's a puppy worth? And often one puppy, two puppies is worth the investment. Because we all know puppies only get sick at midnight, at 3 a.m, on holidays. You know, how often do they get sick at 10 o'clock in the morning when your vet has an appointment? So,
oh, and in the middle of fundraisers, in our case.
Oh, and in the middle of fundraisers, of course. Yeah, quite. And then they're very serious puppies too. So you have to try and explain that.
So Mo, one more thing about the Doppler. The OSU team was really impressed when I had to haul Heine to OSU to whelp the rest of our litter. They'd never seen one used. They've never, you know, they don't have it. They don't use them. And they were just really impressed. The residents, the professor, everybody just thought it was the coolest thing that they'd ever seen. So,
well, that's great. Since I now own for the first time my first stethoscope.
Ah, those are great too. You do have to figure out how to use those too.
I don't use my stuff. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I don't use my my ears. I call them ears. On the pup, I just don't bother because I just don't feel it's terribly effective. The Doppler was way better.
The heart rate of a puppy is so fast. I think all you can really do with a Doppler is hear a heart rate. I guess the digital ones supposedly can give you an idea, but I think the Dopplers will just be more beneficial. And I would definitely let Jamie use it. Renee, she's in a clinic that does repro, and her office was also really impressed, and they're probably going to buy one. Because the thing that I find is the ultrasounds that my vets have used, they're always having to calculate the heart rate off the Doppler, off the ultrasound, as opposed to a Doppler where you get that heart rate. And when you're trying to figure out if a puppy's in distress or not, it's a nice thing to be able to do that.
Gail, I used my stethoscope to find the puppies and then put the Doppler on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So then I wasn't searching as much.
That's a great way to do it. Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
And I probably shouldn't have used our vet's name since other service dog programs who may be.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, never mind. Well,
but anyway.
We'll call it Jamie a man. And the other thing that you guys can do, so Renee's talking about buying one and renting it to their clients. Depending upon how many litters you guys are having, you can ship Dopplers to each other. I loaned a Doppler to Renee. They're an easy thing to ship. They're pretty resilient. So that's a way that you can reduce the cost or at least share the benefit with other organizations. And how long do you need it? 5 days? You know, it's not like you need it the whole time. So, terrific. Okay.
I see the Doppler, the
dealie
that I pulled out.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to spotlight you again, Sylvia. There you go. There's the dealie. These are the ones I have. The ones with the green are perfectly good. And I've had a lot of people ask me, how do I know how much pressure to suck with? That part's really intuitive. You're going to feel it when you put it into the puppy, that you can feel the right amount of pressure to put on it. And because of the cylinder, you don't get anything in your mouth. I mean, I've done CPR on puppies before, but I'd rather do the dilly personally. So they really are terrific. I don't think I would whelp a litter without them either. Excellent. Okay. Thank
you, question.
Sylvia. Yeah. Hey, Deb.
I'm wondering about worming, since I don't have, they're not nursing at all. Do I have to worm?
Yeah, you should.
I did the Fenben for the 40 days to 2 weeks after, well, approximately 2 weeks after.
There are 4 weeks?
They
Six weeks. I would do one round of worming, three days of Fenben, that's it, and then take in a stool sample. You've seen no problems with
no.
stools?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Even with the 40 days, it's worth doing a single round of worming. You could do parental for one day if you've got it, or it's really inexpensive stuff. It's cheaper than the Fenben by quite a bit.
I've got a lot of the Fenben.
I know you're using it. Yeah. Are you buying it by the
liter? Yeah.
The liters. Yeah. You could do the Fenben or parental, but I would do at least one round, because even with the 40 days, we know that that's about 90-95% effective, but that extra 5% means that the puppies could be infected. And now, you know, you send them home and your owners find roundworms, and it's just
it's easier to worm them than to find worms.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Carol, who's that?
Sorry, me.
Go ahead.
I have a question, but I can wait.
No, go ahead.
So my puppies still have not had a firm stool. We took one fecal in and it was negative. We took another one in and they're culturing it. They're in the midst of culturing it. The puppies were growing between 10 and 20% every day until I got the first diarrhea, and they have slowed down to normally about 6 to 8%. Some days it's 3 or 4. So, and that's been like that hard line, and that's been all along. Now, when I look at the weight comparison to my last two litters, again, it's different, but my last litter was 7 puppies. These puppies are 12 days ahead of them weight-wise. And my singleton litter, this litter is on par, like one day behind my singleton okay. weight. So I'm thinking the weights are still fine.
The weights are still fine. Now, remind me how old they are now, Susan.
They're 3 weeks today. So my question is, should I try to, I mean, they're fine. Should I try to give them some solid food earlier than the 40 days or 42 days that you would put in the?
So ideally you feed them right as they come up on 4 weeks.
Right.
So 28 is really what you're looking for. So you've got one more week.
I've been giving them, I noticed because the Benabac did nothing, but as soon as I made a slurry of like, I've got Dr. Mercola's probiotics,
which
my naturopath said she's never seen anything muscle test as strongly, any probiotic as that one. These puppies in 24 hours just look so thrifty. After giving them, so I've been giving them that every day or every other day, and so they're pros at taking things in. They don't really suckle when I put my finger in their mouth anymore, and they're.
But my man, I'm still feeding them. She's still nursing
them. Yes. Oh, and they're still drinking tons, and so she does not want to. She cleans them, but she doesn't want to clean them as much, and I don't. Like I only see the puppies poop maybe once a day. So it's not like they're squirting everywhere all the time, and they're all using the litter box. So I'm seeing what's coming out.
But and just soft, like cow pies.
It's like cow pies and sometimes a little squirty, but it hasn't affected their, how they feel. They're still like normal 3 week old puppies in their behavior, in my opinion. So,
So even though they have teeth and they're not suckling that much, feeding them a little bit early or feeding them a lot early can be challenging. Now, obviously, we do it with puppies that, you know, whose mother won't go near them, or their mother is sick or something like that. So it, can it be done? It can be done, but they're still gaining well. And the optimal food for them right now is milk. But I think you're right. I think like 2 days after you feed them solid food, their stools are going to firm up. So I've seen two things with this chronic, chronic loose stool that we try everything with to support the puppies and it just doesn't go away. The two things that I've seen work is feeding solid food and amoxi or antibiotic of some sort. And I suspect you would prefer not to do the antibiotic. I usually prefer not to do the antibiotic. You're putting all these great probiotics in them and then you give them an antibiotic and just take it all away. So if you if they're doing well, they're still gaining. There's no evidence they're dehydrated or they're ill. I would hold off, try and hold off 7 days, go five if you just feel like their weights aren't going up. But if they're equal to a singleton, they're doing just fine weight-wise. And sometimes with puppies, their guts are so immature. Their microbiome is so immature, hence why we don't want to give them antibiotics, that once it gets thrown off for whatever reason, it can be very hard to recover it. And in the case of your puppies, they haven't been ill, except for the one that was really sort of squirty at the male at the beginning.
And everybody but was treated for 7 days for coccidia, even though it was negative, just because, like, we couldn't explain anything else. So, but it didn't really change much.
And have you tried to use calon-pectin or the pink stuff? So calon-pectin is a clay, it's a natural clay, and it can be very beneficial. I don't know if you've got it at Canadian Tire or Tractor Supply or...
I've got both of those close by. And is that something that would be used for calves? Is that a farm product?
It's used for, I think, most livestock and things. Okay. Like, I mean, it comes in a jug this big and you're giving like 2 milliliters to a puppy. Yeah. So it definitely is not made for dogs.
Okay.
The pink stuff is made for dogs. It comes in a tube like Benabac or the Calsorb or something like that. But the pink stuff's more expensive. Calon-pectin's great. You just syringe it into their mouths. And
I couldn't find the pink stuff here.
Yeah, you have to ship it in. It's only, I think Myra sells it. Only a couple of websites sell it. But the calon-pectin is a good option. So they're both clay products.
Okay.
But I would try that. That may buy you just a little bit more cleanliness and a little less stink between now and the time that you start to feed them.
Okay.
And if you can make it, you know, 3 weeks and 5 days, 3 weeks and 6 days, that would be ideal. But I suspect that once you feed them, you'll see a real change in their stools. Okay. And for whatever reason, whether it was Minty stress at the beginning, the C-section, whatever it was, something got them out of whack and it's just not going back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
So then you should be able to get it at that Tractor Supply store down the road from you.
Yep. I know the one you mean. I'll try it tomorrow. Thanks, Deb.
Terrific. Okay, Carol put a question in a while ago. I'm looking to see if I see her. Carol, if you're on, you're welcome to unmute.
I'm on.
Oh, there you are. There you are. You're right in front of me. So you're 31 days. The puppies are 31 days old. You're still seeing discharge. When you say it's increasing, is it increasing by teaspoons or quarter cups?
I would say it's in between the two. it's definitely enough that I'm pulling the mop out during the day frequently to mop up.
So remind me, first litter?
First litter. not an easy one. We ended up doing a C-section midway through. We lost two puppies. She was not what I would call a natural mother. She's not going to get mom of the year. she will, she still is nursing, but she does not initiate that. So it takes inviting her in and me frequently going in to the whelping box. Now they're in the exercise pen as well, the extender pen. And she's very tolerant with them. She's not mean to them or anything, but it's not something, she's not playing with them and not enjoying them.
Yeah, at this age, I mean, there are a few bitches that enjoy four-week-old puppies, but they usually like them better in a couple weeks. When the puppies really can play and really start learning social skills. Right now, they're kind of boobs, you know, they can't really read anything. I mean, they're sweet and we love them, but they're, for an adult dog, unless they're the hyper maternal, they're not much fun. So don't worry about that aspect.
No, I'm not. She seems to be fine.
But yeah, an increase in discharge to the mop level, the tablespoon or more level, could well be an issue called SIPS, or sub-involution of the placental sites. So when the puppies are born, the umbilical cord or the end of the placenta rips off of the uterus. Mm-hmm. And those are called placental sites, S-I-T-E-S. And so there's these wounds basically all the way through the uterus. And they bleed, and that's why we get discharge afterwards. You know, the bitch is clearing out anything extra, placentas or whatever might be extra from birth, but she's also healing the uterus. Well, in this situation called subinvolution of the placental sites, which almost always happens to maiden bitches with medium to large litters, the sites really don't heal. And so they bleed and they bleed and they bleed and they bleed. And it doesn't sound like your girl is off the charts. There are times that they are hemorrhaging. Like it's very serious. The bitch that we had was probably losing, oh my gosh, a cup and a half or two cups of blood a day. And so we did not have to give her a transfusion, but sometimes you do have to do that. So SIPS is not unusual. If you go and read the literature, the vast majority of them say you have to spay the bitch, that's going to solve it, or you have to wait until the next season and then it resolves. That's a really long time to have blood all over your house. But I'm pretty sure this is an A to Z, but if you are, you're on the Facebook page, Carol.
Yes.
I can post, so prostaglandins, a couple of injections of prostaglandins can usually resolve this very quickly. Now, the debate is, at 4 weeks, she having a discharge isn't rare at all.
Oh, I knew that. It was the red blood that all of a sudden was coming out. I mean, I was mopping up last night and she backed into me, and unfortunately I had on a pair of white slacks, and I had blood from my knee to my ankle, bright red down the pant leg. And I said, this is not normal.
Yeah. So that sounds like SIPS. It is rarely, unless something happened in the C-section and the uterus is ruptured, chances are it is just these placental sites that aren't healing, and they're really not healing. You know, so they are bleeding significantly into the uterus, and obviously then you're going to get this discharge. So I'm glad you're taking her to your vet. Boy, when are you going in? I'll try and get the SIPS paper on the Facebook page so you can take it.
Great.
And talk to your vet about it and see, do you want to wait a little longer or do you want to treat now and try and get it resolved now? Sounds like, I mean, if she's bleeding that much, that it might be worth trying to do the injections now. You'll need to do them at home. I think they're given every 12 hours. I just don't remember off the top of my head. I don't want to speak out of turn. But that's probably a high likelihood. But an ultrasound would probably be a good idea just to make sure everything else looks normal in there and that
there isn't
a tear or something like that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good. Yeah. So if ping me, like PM me tonight, so my phone will ding if I get off the call and I forget, I just want you to have it before you go into bed.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Sure. Okay, scrolling down. Sylvia, any tips for getting puppies to quit sleeping in the litter boxes? If you find one, let me know. Can everybody see Sylvia? Hang on, I'm going to spotlight Sylvia.
Well, the challenge I've run into is when they go into their sleeping area at night, in the middle of the night, I'll wake up to one screaming bloody murder because it wants to potty and can't get in the potty box because it's so I ended up expanding the sleeping area and putting a second potty box in, and that helped a little. But I tried picking them up and moving them. They look at me, go right back. We play that game, 10 times.
You're going to lose that game. Who's got a suggestion? Go.
Alas does. Me.
I can't see you because I've got her spotlighted. Go.
Okay, that's okay. The puppy go here boxes or this litter box is puppies love these because they're like a bed. They have too high, the sides are too high. So they just love to sleep in it. If you could get like maybe bigger litter boxes with less, like the rabbit hutch boxes with less height, and put a bed in there with sides.
That's what I was going to say.
Get yeah, like in. That. Like that. You notice no one's sleeping in that one.
I've been out the last few minutes, but yeah, that's only 2 inches high.
And the other thing, I know this is going to sound crazy and this kind of goes against what I've learned in Avadog, but after they learn how to go into the bathroom, if you move the litter boxes away from the area, from the side that you walk into, because they'll congregate always where you walk into the room. You know, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like this is my in out. I did use this one a little bit, but
yeah. But just if you change, if you get the smaller litter pans, it'll work.
And the beds too, like you said. So this is the first time I've offered beds to my puppies, and I have a big long litter box I have, and I have beds for them. And this is the first time I've never had them want to sleep in the litter box.
I'll try the bed. Somehow the bed, the puppy bed got lost in the move and I have to.
Oh, no. Well, order some cheap cat beds online. I mean, they don't have to be good beds or expensive beds. I just get the, like $2 for $20 cat beds. They last maybe 3 litters, maybe 2. And they do tend to congregate more in the beds, but you've discovered a really important thing, which is you have to have more potty than if you put all your puppies in your potty boxes, you still have to have a bathroom for them.
Right.
So you have to figure out, you know, if everybody's sleeping in the bathroom, somebody has to be able to potty. So I'm glad you expanded the sleeping area.
And as you notice, when I went in the pen, the two that were in this box went back there and potty.
I saw that. You know, I don't know why. They like pellets.
If you increase the size of your pellets, I've noticed you've got the small ones like yesterday's news. If you get dog pellets, which are still made out of their newspaper, or still made out of the paper, but they're bigger, it's not as comfortable as those nice little small ones.
What are they called?
Tracy, what are they called?
Oh, yeah. What did you guys use those pellets? I haven't used
them. Hang on. And I agree with you. They do better with the bigger ones as far as not sleeping on them.
I have horse bedding pellets.
second nature.
Yeah.
Or second, is that right? Second nature?
That,
second.
That's it.
Okay, great. I will definitely try that. Thank you.
Okay, there are some options.
Yeah, the pen is kind of bare right now. I just cleaned it and haven't restocked the toys since they're asleep.
No worries, but try some beds and see if that's helpful to them.
Okay, yeah, I will do that. Thank you very much. Let us know.
Out one of the litter pans and put a little a towel or something in the bottom of it, and there's your bed.
I bet they'll sleep in it.
Well, they're sleeping in the water dish.
Of course they're sleeping in the water dish.
Yeah, it's actually more up above than it looks like from above, but...
It's a water hole, right? They inevitably sleep in the water holes.
So is that linoleum? Because that looks like the linoleum that I've got in my new room.
It is. I put linoleum down over the laminate floors to protect it. Yes.
Yep. I did the same thing. Are you finding that they have a strong enough footing? Because I'm a little concerned about mine because it seems to be a little slippery for my older dogs. And I was just wondering how it does with puppies.
This one I got, I like. It's more of a matte finish than it looks like on the video. But if you compare the laminate is, but it's got a pretty rough roof. It was $50 at Home Depot for a 10x12 sheet. And they don't have any trouble with it at all, I've found.
Great.
I had two big sections of the play mat, the rubber play puzzle mat, but they finally started eating those this week, so I had to pull them out.
Yeah, they're a favorite.
Yeah, and I pulled the sheepskin out, the Sterilite, because they had started, I don't know why, because when they were still in the whelping box, they used the litter box and did not use the Sterilite, but when I put them in the bigger area, they started potting on the Sterilite, so I pulled it out.
Yeah, I find the beds work better because I think we'll talk about it when we do the potty training our litters in October, but it's the change in texture that triggers puppies to urinate. So it's one of the challenges with having a lot of textures in the puppy pen that they get up, they know they need to go, and they'll go to something that has a different texture and pee. And so sometimes that's the Sterilon, sometimes it's the mats. But because beds that have sides, somehow that changes the way they see them. So they don't trundle into a bed usually and go to the bathroom. They're just going to do it on something that's a mat, that's flat on the ground. So I mean, that's not an unusual thing to have them do.
Okay, I figured you guys would have great suggestions, and I appreciate all of that. So I will try the different litter, and I think I'll empty this box tonight and put a pad in it to sleep in and put it back in their sleeping area. See if that helps.
And take a picture for us, Sylvia. If they all end up sleeping in the potty box and not in the bed you made, we want to see it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for the tour. Lori has a question. She's got a first litter from a bitch, pups by C-section on 7/1, 10 weeks old. Oh, bitch is regurgitating to the two remaining pups at 10 weeks. What a nice, devoted mother. Doesn't have much access. You'll have one pup tomorrow. So, Lori, are you keeping the last pup? I'm trying to see if you are on. I don't know if that's Sylvia. I hear a noise, but I can't see who it is. Okay. Oh, Lori says, yes, it's your pick. So, Lori, this will probably go on for another couple of weeks. Your best bet, if it really makes you nuts, is to let them interact before you feed her. So, like, first thing in the morning before she's had breakfast, or before dinner. So 12 hours between meals, typically the bitch has nothing left at that point to regurgitate. But this is a really natural thing that bitches do in developing their puppies. And it's really hard for us to stop it. But typically, now not always, there are the really devoted mothers who will go to 16 weeks, but typically by 12 weeks, this pretty much fades and it doesn't happen much. Mary says she has a bitch that hunted up field mice for her pups and others that regurgitated. Yeah, I had one that used to go hunting mice for her puppies too and would always give them to the smallest and the youngest. It was just lovely, really. You have to love nature when it works. So Lori, that's my recommendation is just try and lessen the time that she has food in her stomach and she interacts with the puppies. You don't have a lot longer. And it's, you know, the pups don't need to be with her right now. Fatina says, I have a question on what a lump could be on a pregnant bitch near teat. Yeah, I'm going to unmute you, Fatina. Or ask to unmute you. There you go. So is it on a mammary gland or near a nipple?
It is near a mammary gland, and it was on the lower one. And it's not my bitch. I had a girl over for breeding a month ago, and the owner came by yesterday to use my Doppler to look for puppies. And as soon as I laid her down, I'm like, what is this thing? She's like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, I think you should go look at have a vet look at it. I'm like, because it was kind of a hard lump. And near that lower teat, and you could move it around. So interestingly, she went this morning and the lump is gone. And with COVID, she can't go in and the vet's like, it's smooth, there's nothing there. All I can think is it's hormonal. So we're kind of joking that I have magic hands and my touching it made it go away. But I kind of doubt that's the case. And then I'm like, I don't know. And I use aloe vera gel with my Doppler because I couldn't find ultrasound gel. Yep. And I don't know if the gel did something or if it's just like, is this something that she needs to watch for in the future? Like, I don't want her to get a mastitis because these are pretty special puppies that we've got coming. So.
Yeah. I would guess. How big was it?
Well, it's a Pomeranian, right? So toy breed dog and like a marble. So not small.
No. But was there any heat or redness? Did it feel to you like a mastitis or did it feel like a lump?
It felt like a lump and you could move it.
Yeah. So these hormonal lumps actually are not that unusual. They do tend to completely freak us out because it's a mammary lump.
Yep.
They will often, what my experience has been is that they'll start when the bitch is 3 or 4. They'll go away between seasons. They'll come back during seasons. And they never turn into a cancer or a mastitis. There's some kind of hormonal mammary lump.
Okay.
Thing. So not terribly unusual. It is actually a little unusual that it went down between yesterday and today. That's a little bit. Because normally they come up as the bitch goes into estrus, they kind of hang out for until the end of diestrus or into anestrus. So that's a little bit more normal. Should she watch it? Absolutely. Should she worry? Probably not.
Okay.
Is she pretty sophisticated about figuring out mastitis?
I think, yeah, she's much more experienced breeding than I am. And when the girl came over for me to do the breeding, that lump wasn't there.
Right. So they tend to sort of come up and then they go down.
Okay.
The time that I would begin to really worry and talk to my vet is when the puppies are about 7 weeks old. Okay. So at that point, now the challenge she has is if it comes back, the puppies might nurse on it. And that can be a little obnoxious for the bitch. But typically from now, I don't have a huge amount of experience. I've probably had three of these over my career. They have never developed milk. You know, sometimes when a puppy nurses on a mammary gland that isn't, but not the nipple, they can actually get milk out of it because of the way a canine mammary gland is structured. Okay. I've never had any get milk out of those lumps. And so they tend to give up depending upon the size of the litter. So if you have a really big litter, they're going to suck on anything. But if you have sort of a normal size litter and the bitch has plenty of milk, they'll usually stop messing with it. But she does need to keep an eye on it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. This was the first time I'd seen something like this. And you know, here I'm putting the Doppler on her to look for poppies and I'm like, what is this thing?
Yeah, that is a bit of a freak. Did you find puppies?
Yes, yes. Yay. So I found two for sure where I heard the whoosh. And then because palm puppies are very small, so they're a little hard to find with the Doppler, even midway. And I found two potential more. So I got heart rates, but the whoosh was really hard to hear. So it could be the same puppy again, but they were in different spots. So like the spots were far enough apart in my experience. It probably is, you know, for sure two, maybe three, maybe a fourth. Who knows?
Excellent. That's exciting.
Yes, it is. I'm very happy since the last breeding of my boy didn't take, but I'm pretty sure I know why, because I didn't do it. So.
Yep. there is a technique.
Yep.
Terrific. Well, let us know how it goes.
All right. Thanks very much.
Sure. Sylvia mentions that her bitch throws a fit trying to get into the puppies to regurgitate. Mine do too. Mary, I saw today that Star missed. What the heck? Did you breed her to Sailor?
Oh, no, that's her sire.
Sorry. I don't have all the pedigree straight. I was just trying to remember.
No, I took her down to Inverain to Edwina Riscus.
Yeah.
And someone else just had a bitch, well, 9 puppies from him yesterday, as a matter of fact. But we had LH surge. We had confirmation of ovulation. We bred on LH plus 3, LH plus 5. No puppies. And so, which I took her to, drove down to Elk Grove to Dr. Christensen to do the ultrasound, because up here we get, the skill level's just not there because there's not a lot of practice, in all fairness. And so he and I talked on the phone and he was really surprised because the timing was good. I had him check her progesterone. It was still high in the upper 20s. I don't have the report in front of me. And he said, you know, 95% of the time they get pregnant, but 5% of the time
they don't. 5%.
And he said that he would suggest going to a different male just in case they're not compatible. And if she missed again, then to go in, he said they could just go in like a TCI at a particular time and go in and remove a little bit of uterine tissue and have it examined. But he said he probably
would do a uterine biopsy
unless she missed again with good timing.
I think that's wise advice.
Yeah, and remember, Mary, you know, Shyla only had 4 with him. And her daughter only had 3.
I went over the last year looking at stuff with him after you and I had chatted about that. And then I waited the whole weekend and kept checking with my Doppler, hoping that the repro vet with all kinds of experience and who said he got a good visual on the uterus, and the uterus was great, no pio, everything looked good inside, just no embryos. But last year, in the last year, there have been 2 singletons, 2 litters of 1, 2 litters of 4 and 1 litter of 3 within the last year.
And that was me.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And so this is, mm-hmm. yeah. And this is one of those things, I don't know. I'm just probably going to, you know, say goodbye to my $500 stud free deposit and not yeah. worry about it. That, mm-hmm. You know, I have Fanny, who would be a nice combination to him, but, you know, and she's proven, we had 6 on a poorly timed litter and 11 puppies on when she was bred with Sailor, which was a TCI mm-hmm. on LH plus 7 on the day of diestrus. So, you know, Fanny's pretty fertile there, but I just don't, I haven't decided what I'm going to do on that end, but I'm definitely going to, if I'm able to lease Star back, I will take her to somebody else. And Siggy's coming up, Star's full sister, and she's going to somebody else.
I think that's wise. I mean, they're really, it's never 100%, even with the best naturals. And so those are the things we don't understand. Compatibility between the sire and dam, something with the sperm that doesn't match the bitch. We right. just don't understand it. I'm really sorry. And I know how frustrating it is, but I think your vet's giving you really good advice. Don't yeah. go to him. 9 yeah. puppies or not. If right. you've seen a singleton, a 3, a 4 from a golden retriever that isn't 14.
That is well-timed.
Well,
and the thing that, and I was asking him about that, and he said, well, that litter of 9 was 4.5 weeks before your litter was due. Now, if he breeds a dog 2 or 3 weeks after he bred your dog and it's a full litter, then he would say, then we come right back to the bitch. But at this point he wasn't, he said, that's not anything that happens before. He dismisses. He said one afternoon in the hot sun could make a guy lose his swimmers. And then, you know, you're out several weeks until he comes back online, if he comes back online. Right. But then I was wondering a little bit too, as I've been thinking about this a lot, you know, before I finally got my letter out to all of the owners waiting, is that Sailor and Tasha had the high drops. And I understand that the latest reasoning is that there's an incompatibility with the male and female on high drops. Now,
I don't know, but yeah.
Star, yeah, we don't know. We're grasping at straws. Star is Sailor's daughter. Punch has the same sire as Tasha. And so, and for that, I just thought, no, I can't, you know, follow up with Siggy there. Siggy's got a different dance card going anyway. But so I don't know. I was thinking about going in and sitting with the pedigrees and talking to the repro vet about it and seeing if he had any thoughts, you know, because he sees more of this than any of us do.
And high drops and infertility, or high drops and misses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I just, you know, you have a lot of things, and it could, and she just didn't take. I mean, that's it. That was the most beautiful LH I've ever seen. Usually I get 2 of them side by side that are faint, but this one was clear. We had the perfect rise. We had the breedings were good. I would say that she did not, her vulva did not become as supple as I've seen in other dogs. But they're all different. You know, right. It would be nothing that I would say, I wouldn't have worried about it. I was just really surprised to get 0.
But her progesterone's high. Her yes. progesterone's high. So you know you got ovulation. You mm-hmm. know that it was one of your more normal seasons. That
yeah. The stud owner said, well, I think we really should have been 6 days earlier, because our days, we were really late if I count the days. And I just kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, you just have to shush. I
joke and said my mother-in-law had 6 boys in 6 years counting days. So...
I was working with Edwina in 1981. So,
yeah.
Speaking of old school, dear woman, but old school.
No, I know. And And I just reminded her, well, remember 6 days before, we didn't even have LH surge yet, and her progesterone was at one, so it wasn't even possible.
Right.
And so it's, yeah, she's just in that percentage, and I just sent out emails to all of the owners saying that, you know, I'm sorry, I'm disappointed too, here are your options, you can roll this deposit and reservation to the next litter, I will honor the price. Or I can just send you back your deposit and then you come completely off the reservation list. You decide, and I'm good with whatever you decide. And that's where we are.
I think that's as hard as, I mean, we have our own disappointment, but then we have 8-10 other people's disappointment. And it always feels like such a burden to share that news.
Yeah. And one of them I'm calling because she just lost her dog, she just lost, it wasn't 10 yet to cancer, but she'd had a dog from us previously for 14 years. And I'm going to call and talk to her because I know she's going to take this harder because I've been getting text from her. How big are the puppies now? You know, when will we know? Da, da, da. And so we just, you know, this is all a part of it. This is in 30, I don't know, however many years now, this is like the fourth miss in over 30 years. So I guess that's okay.
Pretty good stats, but I would definitely not go to him.
No,
see if she's fertile. But will Edwina hold the deposit for another bitch?
The contract says for the same bitch, but if I wanted to go, she would go to another. I mean, especially if I'm concerned that, you know, here I've got an unproven maiden. How about if we take him to a bitch that is proven?
Yeah.
You know, then everybody's happy all the way around. I mean, financially, it would make sense for her to have an opportunity at the rest of the stud fee. And you know, good grief, Punch has alphabet soup behind his name.
Well, hang in there. I'm going to hit a few more questions, but okay. Hang in there. I'm sorry. Lynn had a question about the extra little nipples. Yeah, they happen. They get sucked on depending upon the puppies. They usually don't cause a problem for the bitch. And sometimes they can develop milk. So there's not much to do. It can be hard to block them off from puppies if you need to, but you can. Mo has a question about distances puppies should walk and frequency. Mo, you are on.
I can do video again. So when I know this is fit to be taught,
fit for life. Yeah.
But we have been working with our puppy raisers and trying to think through, and it was brought to my attention that how far should puppies at different ages be walking? And in the book, and so I pulled out the book and I started reading, and the question was, okay, for 8 to 16 weeks, which our puppies are out with our puppy raisers at that time, 15 to 30 minutes at a puppy's pace. Is that a day?
Oh, yeah. Per outing? Or twice a day. Per outing.
Per outing. Okay. Because
per outing.
I can tell you that they're walking more than that. And so there was a concern that we were walking them too much.
So are they walking on leash or off leash?
Yeah. I knew you were going to ask that question. I know that on leash is not exercise. I read the book carefully. It's probably depends on the folks. So if they have a fenced in yard, they're doing a lot in the fenced in yard off leash. But for some of our folks, they live inner city, Indianapolis, and they're on leash, and I'm really glad for it because of the traffic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, not recommending that they go off, but you're going to typically shorten the distance when they're on leash.
Okay.
Unless they can do a long line at a park. And a long line at a park where they're going at puppy's pace. Now, sometimes that means we have to move out, you know, because the puppy wants to run or gamble and you got to unwind the leash. But the key is that when we walk on a 4 or 6 foot leash in a city or in your typical suburban.
That's training.
Yep. It's training, not exercise. And it's very difficult for us to truly do it at the puppy's pace.
Okay.
And so they aren't getting that, the benefits that puppies get from starting, stopping, running, walking, rolling. Those are all really important aspects of it. So, but a long line in a park can be really beneficial. A long line in a backyard can be beneficial, but puppies usually don't do much in their backyard. You know, it's not like you're going for a walk in the backyard. You're going to train a little or play or something like that. So if you, and we talk about it in the book, I know you read it, I can tell, that the getting a long line and doing those saunters, as Chris calls them, are really powerful for puppies. Now, I'll give you an example of my puppy. So we live in the mountains. We don't have enough flat space to put an obedience ring in our area, which is 50 feet by 50 feet. So we're either up or down everywhere we go. And our puppies walk 45 minutes to 60 minutes by 8 weeks of age, often twice a day. But it is always at their pace. Now, there are days, I must admit, that I'm a little bit of a drill sergeant out there, like, we are walking, keep going. But they're never controlled in how they use their bodies. And that allowing them to control their own bodies keeps us from overtiring them usually. It keeps us from unintentionally injuring them because we're sort of requiring them to go at our pace. And especially in the summer, it's hot, the pavement's hot. So as much as they can get to non-paved surfaces, the better off the puppies will be. And I don't know, you know, whether there are enough parks in Indianapolis.
Oh, there are.
There seem to be.
Puppies, now the puppy packets all come with long lines. And we spend a lot of time talking about long lines. They all come with tethers. We all talk about tethers because our puppy raisers keep them as an owner would from 8 weeks to 16 weeks. And when we're in non-COVID times, they then go into prison for the beginning of their training. Our last spring group ended up three times that out in the outside world. And so we actually were teaching those puppy raisers how to train a dog. And they were given the same skills that our handlers in prison use, exactly the same steps. But we used a lot of the same tools. And so I'm just supplying all that and I'm directing people to use them. So this helps me understand that it's not once for the day, but it's, you know, at
least. It can be multiple times. And a lot of the times we have to read the puppy, you know, on a really hot noon walk, the puppy's like, you know, really, we don't have to do this, do we?
No. Well, it became a big question among our group. And so I know it's not quite breeding, but it's puppy raising.
No, puppy raising matters a lot. No, I think that's a really important thing. Cool. Tracy, it's so nice to have you on. It's so Tracy Lee is joining us from Australia, and we're not at 4 a.m, which is fabulous. I'm really glad you've been able to join us. It's terrific. Lynn has a question about deposits. When do most people take deposits? When do you up your puppy price? Those are two very different questions. Do I charge more for a blue puppy as it's harder to get blue puppies? And I have a waiting list for 2 years for blues. Lynn, do you want to unmute yourself? I'm looking to see. Oh, there you are. Hey. So there is a wide array of the way people handle deposits. I take deposits as soon as the buyer and I have committed that we're a good match and that I want them on the list and they want me on the list. And that might be 2 years in advance.
Okay.
But many people won't do that. I think the decision, have you been through the puppy application process class?
I think I did it, but I don't know if I finished the end of it. So I need to go back through it.
Yeah. So the key that we talk about in there and in Introduction to Transformational Dog Breeding is how difficult is it for you to find optimal homes for your puppies? So several of us produce working golden retrievers, and that is not what the vast majority of golden retriever buyers are looking for. And so we are trying to get great owners from a very small pool of people who may not be looking for a puppy when we have a litter. You know, if we just say, oh, we're going to take deposits when the puppies are 4 weeks old, chances are we aren't going to get a lot of working homes for those puppies. If you are selling pet Labradors, then there's a huge market out there and you might well be able to find homes, really good homes, with a shorter deposit period. So you sort of have to say, where am I trying to place my puppies and how big is that pool? And what is the chance that people in that pool are going to be looking for puppies when I have puppies? So that, I think, drives a lot of the deposit decision on how, because from my experience, and I'll let everybody chime in, if people don't put a deposit down, you'll lose a lot of them. They are not as committed. Yeah.
Because I have.
And so, go ahead.
I have a waiting list from last year, but I didn't have some of the colors. Like with Shelties, I have 3 different colors.
Right.
And the sables are popular. The blues are popular. The blues usually sell out before, like, what? She was 3 days old. And I had 4 people waiting for blues. And actually, somebody on my waiting list that was waiting for a different color decided she wanted to buy one, a blue, for her mom. Because her mom had lost her dog and was looking for a puppy. And her mom sounds really good. It's a surprise for her mom. But she's told me a lot about her mom. And I am saying that if somebody buys a puppy that's an older adult, like 70 and up, if their child or something is buying it for them, are they going to keep the puppy if something happens to their parent?
Yeah, that's...
Because I had a guy in BC in the mountains. He's 75, I think. He bought one as a pet / working dog. She goes and checks on the cows with him every day. But he lost his wife. And his kids have said that if something happens to him, they will take the dog. Because they're there like a couple times a week. They know the dog and everything.
Yeah, that's, I mean, any of us could get hit by a bus, certainly, but the chances definitely go up when you're selling to older people.
Well, so I had a bad experience a couple years ago where somebody, an older couple, bought a dog and the lady loved the dog and then she got sick and the husband wasn't taking care of the dog. And then they say, oh, the dog has something wrong with it. No, the dog didn't have anything wrong with it. You were keeping it in a kennel all day.
I've rescued a few of mine with situations like that. So the question about charging more on your puppy price. So you say, when do you up your puppy price? Is that a timeline or is it, do you charge more for certain colors or certain quality?
I just noticed that I'm sort of the lower end of everybody I'm seeing advertising for Shelties.
Raise your prices.
I didn't raise it this year because of COVID. I didn't want to, you know, I have a lot of people on the waiting list, but a lot of people are waiting for blues. And
So, if you have four people waiting for one puppy at 3 days of age, you're probably not charging enough. I mean, that's sort of a brutal way to say it, but clearly they're of more value than you're charging. So you don't have to raise your prices, but if, you know, if you're not making money, if you're not in the black, if you're undercharging everyone else, I was on the other day and I was seeing a golden retriever breeder who is a terrible breeder, lying about clearances and things like that. And she charges what I charge. And I looked at that and said, I'm raising my prices. I mean, seriously. Yeah,
there's another breeder in Saskatchewan. She's CKC registered and she has had blind and deaf puppies because she's breeding double merles.
Double merles. Yeah.
And she's charging the same as me.
So I think that it is really important for us to not be ashamed of charging what we're worth, to not be ashamed of charging what our puppies are worth. I mean, frankly, I don't know why we care so much about what other breeders charge. It really is kind of irrelevant, in my opinion. So charge what you feel that you should.
Tell me not to charge more for one color, but then I don't know, they're all retiring now, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's really up to you. I don't know what everybody else does. I don't personally charge anymore for show puppies or different colored puppies or the ones, I personally don't, but I know other people that do. I think it's a really personal decision on how you want to handle your breeding program. In my opinion, the most important thing is that you are upfront about it, that you don't change prices on people that you've committed to, and that it's just really clear what you're charging. The one thing that I'll say is we have to remember as much as, and we have to teach our buyers that color is very superficial in dogs.
Yeah.
And that temperament is far more important. But because we're selling to human beings and beings are visual.
Years behind my blue stud. That's the grandpa of these puppies.
Right. Yeah, because blues are hard to come by. But so when you're matching pet homes with puppies, that color, the people may think it's really important, but what's more important is that the dog has the temperament that's going to fit their life. And I know it's really hard in Shelties. I know it's really hard in Labradors. I'm very grateful I have one color in my breed because it would just annoy me to no end to have people saying, well, I'll only take a yellow bitch, even though I know I have a black bitch in the litter that is by far the best puppy for them. And so you have to decide, are you willing to make color the dominant placement criteria for your puppies? Is that working for your homes and your puppies? If it is, you don't have to fix it. But guiding people to say, if you're looking for a pet, you were looking for a stud dog. That's very different. People that are looking for pets, a blue dog that doesn't fit their life, say it's a blue dog with way too much energy, or it's one of those Shelties that's afraid of everything and the family has four kids, that color, it doesn't matter to them after they get the dog. So you have to decide how much you're going to buy into that.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it's purely your decision, Lynn. I don't think we need to take a vote on it. I think as long as you're being ethical and dealing with your buyers in an ethical way, raise your prices, charge more for the blues. You know, honestly, if you could raise the prices of your sables and your, is it buys?
Tries,
raise them too. You know, get what your puppies are worth. And so that what you're doing is being valued. I wouldn't sell them for 10 grand, but if you did and you could get it, it wouldn't matter to me. I wouldn't feel badly about raising your prices. And honestly, the market will tell you if you, you know, so if you say, okay, I'm going to double my price and you can't sell your puppies, market just told you that that was not the right price. So you can play with it. I do think that not raising prices once you've made a commitment to someone is pretty important. And I know it's hard if you have a C-section or a sick litter, but I do think that's something that we have to,
okay. Because I'm going to try and do genetic testing. I didn't get it done for this litter, and it probably won't come back because they're already a week old. I don't know that it would come back before they're ready to go or not. So
depends about what you're doing. Some of them can turn around in a week. Others will take much longer. So it depends upon the tests and the lab. It is, you can get DNA from nursing puppies, but it is a bit more challenging and you really have to follow the directions that the lab gives you because they have to be separated from their mother for a while, et cetera. But some labs will turn it around. DDC turns some of the tests around in 3 days. Others, like Embark's, going to take 4 weeks. So depends upon what you're testing. But you can call the labs to find out. Okay, I'm going to catch the last question. I haven't done very well on the ones that are mailed in. Let us know how it goes, Lynn. Jackie Mattson, Jacqueline is saying we charge the same price for all puppies as they all require the same work and health testing. Yeah, I that's why I charge the same price. And I've always been amazed that people sell show puppies for more because you're selling it to someone who's about to drop a whole lot of money into titling their dog. And that title is going to benefit you in most cases. So I definitely don't charge more for those dogs. Okay, wait, I have a couple more questions. Erin asked about base narrow canines. She had a puppy whose parents, I don't see if you're on, Erin. I don't know if you're there. She just heard from some owners, puppy's 5 months old. They had the canines removed at 4 months because the vet said, and the puppy probably had base narrow canines. They didn't give any documentation. I don't know. I can't tell from Erin's question if they're asking for money back. And she hasn't produced it in the past. Base narrow canines is when the canines don't grow out. They grow straight up. They often will go into the palate of the puppy and can be painful. They are, a lot of times pretty mild and many times will be fine once the adult teeth come in. Pulling the canines can be very beneficial for it because then the rest of the teeth end up in the right place. The one thing to remember is that teeth in puppies are malleable, movable. So one of the best treatments for base narrow canines are having the puppy hold a ball, if it will, because the ball puts pressure on the canines and will spread them. So if you can get the puppy to do that. Renee is asking what breed. I'm trying to remember what Erin has. Papillons, I think, but I'm not positive.
Hi, Dan. Can you hear me?
Oh, there you are. Hey, no, not Papillons.
Yeah.
Hi, Erin.
Hey, thank you for taking my question. Yeah, so this particular family, they're in Denver. And when she initially called me after her dog had a couple visits at the vet, you know, the puppy had a thorough exam and a health certificate issued, which I understand things can be missed. You know, I wasn't able to go in on the appointment, so okay. I had mentioned ball therapy, and historically, not of any dogs that I have bred, but of my mentors, they usually self-correct, and they told me that they didn't recommend pulling the baby canines because then it can then misalign the route of the adult teeth, unless it is causing pain, they're not eating, they're losing weight. So I had told her, you know, what the recommendation was. I gave her some articles on ball therapy. When she took that to her vet, the vet didn't agree with that. He said he's never seen that ball therapy worked, and he really pushed having the baby canines removed. I asked her to please wait. I said those teeth are going to be coming out, you know, between 5 and 6 months. If he's still eating and playing and acting normally, not losing any weight, I asked her to wait, and she did. And I found out after the fact. And in her email, she's like, I know in your contract, it doesn't cover base scenario canines, but this is what we've incurred thus far. And she gave me a total. So I think her expectation is that we will cover the cost. So I'm very cautious in any type of email exchange, and she won't answer my phone calls. And it seems like she's wanting an email exchange. So I'm very cautious.
So there's nothing in your contract about it, and no documentation was provided or photos or anything like that. I mean, for me, yeah, most likely, I would say, gosh, I hope that resolves it. Let me know how it goes. I don't think I would cover, you know, sorry. Stuff happens with puppies and growing things. And if you have a reasonable warranty that's going to cover other issues, you want to be really kind about it. You want to be really supportive about it. But that doesn't mean you have to write a check. That it was kind of, yeah, their decision.
I mean, I want to do the right thing, because of course I stand behind my puppies, but then I don't want to be taken advantage of either.
So. Well, does your warranty cover what they need to do to get some money? Does it say you have to have a second opinion? You have to provide, yes, me with documents? Okay.
Yes, it does. I mean,
mm-hmm. So I would be as lovely as you can possibly be in the email and just say, oh my gosh, I hope that helps. We've never had that before. I've never seen that. I don't know of anybody who's pulled teeth. Let me know how it turns out.
Yeah,
send some photos.
I sent that.
Because, yeah, well, I mean, we want to do the right thing, but at the same time, you know, it would be like my parents looking for recovery because I had braces. I mean, like, seriously, there's just stuff that happens while creatures grow.
Yeah.
And your job is to look for as many inherited traits as you can find that are known in your breed, and to do your best to provide clearances or pedigree analysis.
Correct, which we do, absolutely.
So this is just one I personally, and you guys can pan me if you think I'm wrong, but I personally would not feel any obligation to do anything other than, hey, let me know. I hope it works out.
Yeah. Thanks, Gail. I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, do. You gotta love those emails.
I don't want this one family to suck all the joy out of, you know, how things can happen, but.
Yeah, they can. And that's why I think being as upbeat and supportive as you can without taking any of the burden on, you know, so.
Yeah, my husband wanted to ask too if you thought things like that would, the base neural canines would be genetic, you know, of the puppies that Pearl has had. We haven't experienced in any of our litter since we have began. We breed multi-generational Australian Labradoodles, so we've studied the pedigrees and asked those questions when we acquired our breeding stock. But we understand that things happen. You know, you can't guarantee 100% of everything. So
no,
the way she went about it, she could have approached it a lot differently than how she did. So I think maybe that's the bigger.
Yep. Yep. And it can be challenging, and you walk a fine line of being supportive without owning things. Can base neuro canines be inherited? Possibly. Can they not be inherited? Possibly. We just really don't know. Many of these dentition issues might show up every four generations. And as a breeder, there's almost no way to manage that. Now, if you're breeding a dog with base narrow canines, or you're breeding the daughter or the son of one, well, that's different. But if you've not seen in your pedigrees and you've done the pedigree analysis, it's not as if we know that it's inherited and how it's inherited. So I think you're fine to not support this claim. And it doesn't, you know, they haven't really made an overt claim. So I would kind of be obtuse about it as if you don't understand and just drive on and be supportive and happy. Share some pictures from the other litter mates or something like that. Not of their teeth, of something completely, like just completely ignore it if you can.
Yeah, I do. I share photos of the other, we have like a private Facebook group for our puppy families. So yep. Yeah, they're always posting updates of their puppies, which she sees, I'm sure, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I would, if they get really serious and they say, hey, we want reimbursement for this, then you can address it as a serious claim. And then you're going to, you know, you have to decide if you're going to say no or not. But if she's just sort of coming about it completely indirectly.
Yeah.
Personally, I'd ignore it. Good luck with it, Erin. Let us know.
Thank you.
Okay.
I will.
Okay. Tracy put a really nice comment on pricing and how we explain to people. And I love they all get the same amount of love. That's a wonderful way to put it. You do increase prices on your rare colors. Yep. And it does help weed out people. I have also not seen a lot of breeders having to drop their prices, but that isn't across the board. You know, it really is breed dependent and location dependent, but it sounds like Australia, there's lots of people looking right now. There's lots of people in the United States looking. So such an interesting time to be a dog breeder right now. So, wow, guys.
I opened my waiting list. Usually it's closed, but I opened my waiting list on the weekend and I opened it at 10 o'clock at night. By 7 a.m. I had 25 applicants. I closed it at 6 p.m. with 50 applicants. That will do me for the year.
No kidding. And you have a little work out of you to go through. And
I do.
Oh my gosh. 50 applications at one time. I'd be like, I don't know why. I love talking to people. I love meeting people, but for some reason, just dealing with the applications is just daunting sometimes. Wow. Wow. That's amazing. Okay, guys. Wonderful to see you. I have kept you way too late today, but it was a great call. Really good questions. I loved seeing everyone. And this will be up on the web probably day after tomorrow. Nicole may get to it tomorrow. So if you want to go back and review anything, it will be available. Otherwise, I hope that I will see you at Advanced Contracts on September 17th at 3 p.m. And if you can't make it, that class will be up within a couple of days with the information. And I'm 99% sure that they have sample contracts for us. So we'll be able to see some sample contracts as we go. So wonderful. Oh, Carol, Sips, thank you for reminding me. I have my note here. Great to see everybody. Stay safe. I'll go track that down right now, Carol.
Bye, guys.
Bye.